on Iowa Politics for Friday, December 5th, 2015. This week, did an old email get Hillary Clinton in some hot caucus water? A few Republicans jostle for a seat in the front row, and we parse the polls. Greetings, everyone. I'm Aaron Murphy, State House Bureau Chief for Lee Newspapers. With me today are Ed Tibbetts of the Quad City Times. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Aaron.
Christinia Crippas of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier. Good morning, Christinia.
Good morning, guys.
Brett Hayworth of the Sioux City Journal is here. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning. Hello, listeners.
And finally, Gazette columnist Todd Dorman. Hello, Todd.
Good morning.
As a reminder, you can subscribe to On Iowa Politics on iTunes and Stitcher, and also find us on Twitter and Facebook. We're glad to be back with you this week after a one-week hiatus. We hope you all enjoyed your Thanksgiving. First up this week, the ongoing investigation of Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server while serving as Secretary of State had not been causing a lot of headaches for the Democratic frontrunner's campaign recently. Until this week, that is, when an old email surfaced in which Clinton referred to caucuses as, quote, creatures of the party's extremes, unquote. Brett, you got Secretary Clinton in your area this morning in western Iowa. While it's important here that we note in the email that Clinton was writing about the 2012 Republican presidential race, but she did refer to the caucuses in general. Brett, is this something that she's going to have to explain away to Democratic Iowa caucus goers who may have been upset by that comment?
Yeah, well, I know since this email surfaced a couple of days ago, there's been all kinds of Republican-leaning groups that have wanted her to have been slamming her for what she wrote in that email and demanding an apology. And I saw some more of that this morning as I prepped to go cover her in Sioux City and saying that, you know, Iowans are owed an apology, so to speak. As far as whether that's going to hurt her with Democratic caucus goers, I guess I'm not exactly seeing that. I would say that, I mean, for what it's worth, I feel like she should maybe address it this morning just to clear the air or just, you know, to acknowledge it because it is a, you know, it's one of the news cycle that's happening this week. And I think she might be well versed to just address it and hit it head on as she speaks this morning here in Sioux City. But as far as any harm that she might get as we're 2 months from the caucuses now, it seems like she's really kind of coalesced and, you know, taking hold of the race in Iowa and probably nationally. I think a lot of people are on board with her, and you know that it's not the nicest thing you want to say when you're essentially trying to win a vote in an important state where you slam the process or at least say something derogatory about it. That's not something you necessarily want to have, you know, as a narrative. But overall, I just don't see it that it's going to be an overall drag on her campaign here in Iowa.
Yeah, and Ed, you reported on this story. The only thing I know that some Iowans in general, but Democrats worry about protecting the First in the Nation caucus status, and there are some perceptions out there that the Iowa and the caucuses are not Hillary's Clinton's most favorite thing in the world, and so maybe this email strikes at that nerve. As I said, you reported on this story. What did the Clinton campaign say in defense of this email?
Well, they offered no explanation for the context of the email, but said clearly that any suggestion that she was denigrating the caucuses is wrong. And it's important to note that her email did not refer specifically to the Iowa caucuses, only to caucuses in general. And I think that, we know that she finished third in 2008. We know that she's, and as have others, expressed reservations about the inclusiveness of the caucuses. I think the use of the word extreme, probably caught the attention of some folks. The interesting thing is, I think, is, all the Democrats would have probably applied the word extreme to Republican caucus goers, particularly in Iowa, though not vice versa. Or, you know, and not to Democrats. Of course, I think Republicans would probably refer to Democratic caucus goers as the extreme. So, you know, I'm with Brett. Headache, okay, not a migraine, though.
Okay. Well, let's turn now to the Republican race, where Donald Trump still leads most of the polls that we see. But the group behind him is starting to shuffle a little bit, in particular U.S. Senators Ted Cruz of Texas and Marco Rubio of Florida appear to be on the rise in Iowa. Todd, is this just another candidate's turn to make a charge in the polls? We've seen a little bit of this already this year with Scott Walker and then Ben Carson, even Carly Fiorina to a certain degree. Or do Cruz and Rubio have more staying power?
Yeah, I think it is probably more than just sort of a reshuffling. I get the sense that maybe with Cruz, we might be actually seeing the long-fabled coalescence of the evangelicals. We've all watched for it and wondered whether it would happen, and maybe it is happening. I think Cruz is certainly a charismatic candidate who can appeal to that constituency and is doing so. And I think with Marco Rubio, you're seeing someone who maybe folks who are more of the establishment bent or want to put somebody up that they think can win the general election are maybe starting to coalesce around the possibility of his nomination as opposed to, you know, Donald Trump, which it seems like there are more and more Republicans starting to get extremely nervous and starting to speak out about how it's a really bad idea for the party to nominate Donald Trump. So I think those two big sort of constituencies, the evangelical voters who are concerned about social issues and values issues and the establishment that's concerned about winning, are starting to look for candidates to rally behind and possibly, you know, finally at long last pull the Donald down from the front runner status that's been so troubling for a lot of Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Cruz, Brett, he's taken a beating this week in Iowa from a pro-ethanol group that's hitting him for his reluctance to support the federal ethanol mandate. That also kind of provides an interesting layer to Representative Steve King's endorsement of Cruz. King, the 4th District Congressman from Western Iowa, is a strong ethanol supporter. So what do we make of this, Brett? Will Cruz's anti-RFS stance hurt him in Iowa? And why did King overlook his position on that?
Well, yeah, certainly. Congressman King in the 2000s, when he first was in Congress, he absolutely loved in his public events, always touting how Iowa, the district that he represented, had risen to the most renewable energy producing congressional district in the nation. And he would always relish telling that story. And, you know, there's that, you know, I guess a longstanding ethic in Iowa that when a person's running for president and they come to Iowa right away in the process, they get asked about, you know, their support for ethanol because, you know, all this corn that we grow here is the main ingredient. And, you know, you'll hear that a candidate, that they can't do well in Iowa if they don't support ethanol. And you know, King was among the people that blasted that RFS new standard you know, so he obviously does not agree with it whatsoever. As far as whether it will hurt Cruz, I mean, it just seems like the national, with all the breaking events lately, that people are maybe more concerned about terrorism and defense and, I guess, continuing discussion on the role of guns, you know, with the things that have happened in the last weeks or so. And so, if Cruz isn't a huge ethanol supporter, you know, it may not be a wound to his candidacy. As far as how why King would overlook it, I guess he stood beside him 2 weeks ago today. They were in Sioux City on the heels of that announcement of the endorsement, and they talked about King would talk about all these stances where Cruz fit with him, and it was an overall package sort of thing, and nothing was mentioned about ethanol, and no one during the questioning of that event asked about ethanol. So, again, I guess I go toward the fact that there's other issues that seem to have primacy right now, and that it may not, it's not that huge of a hit to Cruz at this point.
Yeah, you know, and that's a good point, Brett. It's one of those things that these kinds of stories get involved in the news cycle, and we report on them, we talk about them, but at the end of the day, is it one of those things that's going to make someone make a decision one way or the other when they're pulling the lever or on caucus night? That's always the big question, and a lot of times with these kinds of issues, that's not the case. It's still the typical economy, national security.
Well, it just seems like over the years, ethanol has kind of faded as an issue. I mean, I remember when George W. Bush came in 1999, and that was the big question. You know, what would he say about ethanol? He's the governor of Texas. I mean, it was a big deal. It was something that he addressed when he came to Des Moines and had his first speech to sort of the big time Republican leaders in the state, and you know, pledged to support ethanol, and it was a big deal. I think that was sort of the last time that it was a big deal. I mean, it just seems like since then, you've had several candidates that did okay in Iowa that denounced the subsidies and the tax breaks and the mandates. And I just think with voters, I think there's still support for ethanol in Iowa. Obviously, I just don't think it's as Brett alluded to. I mean, I just don't think it's an issue anymore that a lot of caucus goers, you know, make their decision based on where someone stands on ethanol.
And before we leave this Republican field, Christina lurking behind Cruz and Rubio in the next pack, Jeb Bush. His polling has not yet flatlined, but at the same time, he seems to be mired in that middle pack. You've covered him recently here. What are Republican voters saying about Bush? And can he still have a successful Iowa caucus despite him maybe not being the most appealing candidate to the state's more conservative and evangelical base?
Yeah, so I thought, you know, what going off of what Todd was saying earlier about this kind of much talked about conservative coalescing, I think one of the things I got from this event with Jeb Bush is that there is definitely an alternative looking to kind of coalesce around an establishment candidate. They're not as much tuned in with the Ted Cruz's, the Donald Trump's especially. I heard a lot of negative comments about Donald Trump and talking to people after the event. So I think that there are people maybe looking for that more moderate, more establishment candidate. And the couple people I talked to seem to think that Jeb Bush was that person, but of course they were at a Jeb Bush event. Generally, what I am hearing from people at some of these events, though, is they're looking for, like Todd said, that candidate who can win. And I think that's a concern with some of the evangelical people, for some of the more moderate Republicans at some of these events, is can we find that candidate who not only can win our primary, but can win in the general election? And so I think that's a question that Republican voters are still sort of dancing with here as we get down in the last couple months before the February caucuses.
All right. And finally this week, before we go, we want to talk a little bit about the polls. They drive so much of the political discussion during campaigns and election season. I believe you may have heard this host reference them once or twice in this very podcast. But they have their limitations as well. Ed, you are working on a story this week about polls and specifically when Iowa caucus goers make up their minds on a candidate. Tell us a little bit about what you've learned in your reporting this week.
Well, I think all of us who talk to caucus goers know this. At this stage of the game, very few people probably have truly made up their mind. And yet, you're right, polling has such a huge impact on how this campaign plays out. We do hear the standard reminders that pollings are a snapshot and a lot can change, but I don't know how much that really breaks through. So, you know, we spent some time on a campaign trail talking to voters and found that it's not hard to find undecided voters. It's, in fact, hard to find folks who truly are decided. What I'm trying to point out is that even though the polls say what they say, which often is that lately Donald Trump, Ben Carson leading, you add up all the numbers of all the other folks, and you have perhaps 75-80% of the electorate apparently decided. In reality, exit polls have told us that in Iowa anyway, like in 2012, two-thirds of the voters won't commit until the last month. Close to half in 2012 didn't commit until the last few days. And so There's a lot of campaigning to be done, and there's a lot of deciding to do. And everybody who goes to the caucuses have their own sort of rubric that they work through to do this. Today, in early December, they're not doing it yet. It's something that's worth remembering.
Absolutely, and it's something I know that when I talked about polling in other venues, that's something you always got to caution, like you said, Ed, it's still driving the discussion, and is that getting through to people? It's still such a huge impact on political coverage and the discussion of these races, and they have other limitations as well. Kristinia, Pat Murphy's congressional campaign this week published a poll that suggested he is the best Democratic candidate to face incumbent Republican Rod Blum in Northeast Iowa's first congressional district. But that poll had some pretty serious caveats as well. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, first of all, just kind of going off of what Ed was saying, it's so early in the first district race, and right now I think so many people's minds are really more on the caucuses and less so on a congressional race where the primary won't be held until next June. So I think that's probably the first caveat we got here. And then second of all, it was a poll of residents, not registered voters or even likely voters. Generally, of course, we look for an idea of who's going to turn out to vote by past voting experience. So, that the people that basically, I think residents tells us that they've heard these names, whether or not they vote for them, we don't know. It was not one of the major polling firms that we've heard of. It was associated with the United Transportation Union. And it did include one of the Democratic candidates, Gary Kroger. And then finally, it still showed Pat Murphy losing to Rod Blum, though by a smaller margin than the other Democratic candidate, Monica Vernon. I guess that part is especially kind of interesting because many people consider this race to be leaning Democratic or have a potential to go Democratic. So all in all, it was just kind of a strange poll that I'm not really sure told us a whole lot about the state of the race.
Yeah, it just goes to remind you, and maybe if the thing to take away from all this is before you digest a poll, read the ingredients, right? There's all the things that we talked about today and more, right? All right. Well, hey, that's everything we wanted to cover today. Thanks for listening. I hope it was worth your time. If you like the show, tell a friend, subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher, and follow us on Twitter. Fan mail may be sent to oniowapolitics@gmail.com. You can find us every week on the home pages of the Quad City Times, the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier, the Sioux City Journal, the Mason City Globe Gazette, the Muscatine Journal, and the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Johnny on Point, a Cedar Rapids rock band, will play us out. If you know a band or know a talented Iowa musician who should be on our show, send us a sound file. For Ed, Kristinia, Brett, Todd, and our producer, Claire, I'm Aaron Murphy. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week. Thank you.